Welcome back everyone to another episode of the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's gonna be a big show, and joining me on this big show, Jared Jackson. How's it going?
What's going on?
It's a sad day, somber day.
It's one of those days.
Obviously. So look, we have a lot of things that we're gonna talk about, but we do wanna talk about 9/11, obviously. And I wanna start off informally. We have, some sad, kooky stuff a little bit later on, but just it's been 18 years. Which means that there are people who can vote, people who are serving abroad, who hadn't even been born when it happened, obviously, as many people have acknowledged. And it's like I still remember exactly, as everyone who was old enough at the time, I remember exactly what I was doing, where I was when it happened. I had just gotten to college. I was in a quad. Mm-hmm. It was like four people. It was a big room with a TV. So everyone on the floor, that's where we gathered as it was going on. I remember waking up when the first plane had hit. I saw online news, it was plane crashes in the Trade Center. And I went back to sleep because there were no details. And so I thought it was just a little thing, an accident. Mm-hmm. That's all. Woke back up 15 minutes later, whatever. And it was, this world changing thing.
Where were you? Which school you said?
I was at UConn. Uh-huh. Yeah. What
so
about you?
It was real time. Because so on the West Coast, I'm at home. Mm-hmm. And I'm in college as well. It's my senior year. And
it's much earlier.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much earlier in the day. And then I didn't have, it was roommates, we didn't have like cable and stuff. So I would listen to the radio when I'd sleep, just music. And then so there was, everything had been preempted and there was those news reports and all this stuff. And it woke me up with the chatter and it didn't seem real. I was like,
yeah,
that doesn't make any sense. But again, it was like, at this point, it's 7, 8 a.m. West Coast time, you know? So maybe 8, 9. And then so it was, I had to go to class that day. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to campus. This isn't gonna work out. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of I think maybe this is the majority of people's reaction was coming to terms that it was real. That that's what was actually happening. You hear reporting, like you said, you heard it and you thought, oh, maybe a small plane accident, some inexperienced pilot.
That's what
hit
I thought.
Something, right?
Which seems crazy in hindsight.
Right. But those things happen. People have small plane accidents all the time. So you're like, maybe that's what happened. And it just happened in the worst place, in the middle of a metropolitan area. But so when you hear it, and then many people, I think, have said, once the second plane hit, then people are like, oh man, this is real. Mm-hmm. Like this is calculated, not just, oh man, this big plane had a huge accident. This was calculated. And then what people do with the rest of their day, rest of their week, and who they call, and what you find out, and then discover who you know that's in the city. All that just went into, and you're in this halfway panic, and you think, where else are the targeted things happening right now? This is, this is a targeted thing. Yeah. So when you're in big cities like LA, New York, Chicago, wherever, Miami, you may think, what else is coming here?
Yeah.
That was the main thing that happened during that day.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, there was more going on outside of New York on that day. And there have been any number of horrific attacks since then. Horrific mass shootings, attacks with cars, bombings. I mean, look at Afghanistan. On any given month, there's a terrible attack. But there's still, in the 18 years, there hasn't been anything to match it. And it's weird that there are people who are growing up, in the world after it, where it's like a thing that you read about, I guess. And yet it's one of the most historic events, so just how terrible it actually was.
And so I think we have to relay, for people who, of all those of us that lived it and had the real experience of the feeling surrounding it, because we didn't have those, I don't have those real lived experiences with civil rights era and things that tragedies that happened then, other wars we've been involved in.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of times us older folks' responsibility to make sure the people who didn't experience it understand the gravity of it and how it played out afterwards.
Yeah.
In reality, because we complain about how things we never lived through or experienced in history with wars, disagreements, that we change over and make a bland history of. We're like, it happened and now everything is great now. No, there's things that are happening today that are a direct result of what happened after that day. And we can go as far back as the beginning of our nation's history. There's things that founding fathers and leaders and presidents and congressional people from way back in the day, from turn of the when 1900 turned, that affect today. We can't just not connect everything. So let's not forget, it's 18 years ago. We're already beginning to forget how things happened, who did what, and why we're in the position we're in now and who is still dying from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, like, for the books, like, if you're really young and you're going to school and there's a section in your book that talks about 9/11, I wonder how much it talks about what happened politically after that, how it was used almost instantaneously to put into effect plans that had already been in existence for certain, you know, foreign military actions, the clamping down of rights, the shredding of sections of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Like, so much we're still only theoretically going to recover from at some point. There was some recovery under mm-hmm. Obama in some of those areas, but not in a lot of them. Mm-hmm. It was just so significant, not just for the day, but and then also, I mean, one thing I just want to mention, I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit here. But I was doing some reading, and officials estimate that more than 2,000 of the first responders who were, you know, at Ground Zero working in the months after it have died since it because of respiratory illnesses and cancer from the toxic materials that they were forced to breathe in. And officials estimate that at some point in the future, more will have died from cancers and other diseases from the cleanup than died on that day. And so it's just in all of these other ways, there's the tragedy of the day, and then there's the needless tragedies that came about as a result of it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, different factions of our government and, you know, negligence on the part of our elected officials decided to heap on top of the tragedy of 9/11.
There's people who went to war and joined the military because of this act, because of what happened that day. And we were just talking earlier this year about how John Stewart was touring, honestly, sadly, mm-hmm. with these 9/11 responders looking to save their lives because of the things that's gonna happen to them health-wise that weren't being backed up by Mitch McConnell and in Congress. You have to go through and do the things to fulfill the promises you made to the people that sacrificed themselves yeah. for what happened afterwards. It wasn't just military personnel that went and risked their lives and gave. It's people that day that went in, people that weren't first responders, people that just lived there mm-hmm. and maybe had some connection to the city and were there.
Yeah.
And we're gonna talk about people who said they were there.
Exactly, yeah. We'll turn that in just a sec. Yeah, there's no, the weird thing, it's like, I guess it's a form of cynicism that you have to develop in politics, is that there's no actual red lines. Like mm-hmm. things that you think are a line in the sand, things you think, well, clearly no one could ever actually do this. Like if you had gone back on, you know, the 9/12 and then said, oh, did you know that it is going to be a monumental effort to try to get healthcare for the people who are right now digging yeah. through the rubble to find survivors yeah. and to find bodies? It would have been incomprehensible. And yet, that was a big thing. It took celebrity power multiple times yeah. now. And hopefully, unless the law changes, it's good for a long time now as a result of the most recent efforts. But yeah, multiple serious politicians who talk about their responsibility to the country and their desire to protect us are like, nah, cost too much money. You can die of cancer. I honestly don't Absolutely. Care. I'm not going to do anything. Like, that should, there aren't words, or at least I don't have them
yeah.
to express that. On a similar topic, let's turn to something ridiculous. And look, honestly, I sort of apologize in advance for covering what we're gonna cover, but considering how serious it is and how it forever changed so much about our country and our politics, the idea that this topic would be approached with the buffoonery and self-interest that you're about to see, that's also offensive. So let's get into it.
I was down there and I watched our police and our firemen down on 7-Eleven, down at the World Trade Center right after it came down. And I saw the greatest people I've ever seen in action.
Yeah, so that's Donald Trump. It wasn't 7-Eleven, maybe it's just a slip of the tongue, I guess. Who knows? But the worst claim there, rather than just calling it 7-Eleven, it's not a place to go get an energy drink. It was, you know, the most horrific attack against our country in history. Is the continuing claim that he was down there helping. This is something that he has been saying for years and years. Here's another clip.
Everyone who helped clear the rubble, and I was there, and I watched, and I helped a little bit. But I want to tell you, those people were amazing. Clearing the rubble, trying to find additional lives. You didn't know what was going to come down on all of us, and they handled it.
Yeah, they were heroes. I can't actually imagine it. And they were far more heroic than anyone thought at the time, because so many of them would go on to face a lifetime of health problems, and for many of them, death. He wasn't there. He wasn't clearing rubble. Like, to say that's insane. That's crazy. There was an actor, do you remember? I don't even remember his name. There was an actor like 10 years ago, came out that he'd been lying the entire time about having like a brother who died or something like that. Like to insert yourself in and pretend that you were helping find bodies, that's sociopathic.
And again, so okay, there's people who embellish stories. I got friends who talk about how they picked all 65 teams of the NCAA tournament from the play-in game to the final thing. That is the kind of lie that you tell your friends while you're drinking a beer and watching the tournament because you're a compulsive liar and you want your friends to think you're cool. To tell at a political rally a lie like that encompasses a tragedy like that actually involved real people who were doing that kind of work, for political gain has so many levels of insanity to it and I guess an agenda behind it, rather than just Joe Schmo from college telling me he knows how to pick every team in the tournament. That's the kind of lie you can go, remember when Joe said that? Moving on. This is, again, this is a political rally to get elected president to then become the guy who's doing the things he's doing to the country right now.
Yeah.
That's part of your appeal. That's when it becomes a more dangerous situation.
Yeah, and look, he's claimed that the fact checks are to get through to the people in the crowd who know that he's lying and don't care. The same people who will chant, never forget, never forget, never forget. Oh yeah, he was probably helping. That guy who's never done a day of honest work in his entire life, he was probably digging through the rubble. That's what was going on. But the Washington Post and the AP sought information from the Trump campaign in 2016 about how he helped. They didn't get any response. They tried to verify his claim with information from the time. Couldn't find anything. In fact, New York Fire Department Battalion Chief Richard Ailes said, "I was in a supervisory role with the fire department at the time. I was there several months. I have no knowledge of his being down there." Some Trump supporters have backed off and said, no. Even though he's clearly saying that he did it, he's not actually saying that he did it. He's saying that he sent people, which is a claim that he has made at other times. It's also a claim that he has provided absolutely no evidence for in almost two decades. That battalion chief said if he had sent a crew of 100, or sometimes he says 125, sometimes he says 200, sometimes he says 250, it changes depending on the crowd. Mm-hmm. If he had done that, there would be a record of it. Everybody worked under direct supervision of the police and fire department and the joint commander for emergency services. Is there a chance he was ever down there by himself and I didn't know it? It's possible, but I know of no one who ever witnessed him there. But that's the sort of mistake, the sort of lie you would tell if you had no idea how things were actually done. If you looked at the cleanup and thought, people are probably just taking the bus there and digging with a shovel. If that's the level of seriousness that you approach this tragedy with, then sure, you'll claim that you sent hundreds of people there to help and then have no evidence whatsoever to actually buttress that.
Sent them. Okay, if you're one of the people who's frustrated or may be frustrated that on a day like this, as you apologize before we start talking about this aspect of it, for criticism of President Trump over his reaction to that tragedy, understand that you need to have such a higher level of disdain for what he actually did as far as the things he has said. If you think we're supposed to overlook the things that he has done because of the nature of the tragedy, imagine how much he doesn't care about the nature of the tragedy that he decided to say those things.
Exactly.
It's for self-gain, and that is the most disgusting part.
We've watched two decades of politicians using 9/11 to launch wars, to make themselves seem patriotic and everything. Rudy Giuliani, that was his whole run. And if that offends you, then a pettier, more self-centered version of it should annoy you even more. I mean, there's so many of these. We're not going to go through all of them, but you know, he got $150,000 grant because he said that he was housing people during the cleanup. He has provided no evidence of that, and the grant claim at the time had nothing about housing people. He bragged on the day of the attack that now his building was the tallest. He claimed that from his window in his apartment, he saw people jumping out of the windows. His apartment was 4 miles from ground zero. He didn't see bodies falling from the windows.
And what's impressive about that? Why would I tell my friends, I saw people about to die?
Say that you watched it. Everybody, we did it. When you think about 9/11, you think about what you were doing at the time. Totally understandable. Stop lying about it. Stop claiming that you saw people die personally with your bare eyes. It didn't happen. It's insane. It's insane and it's consequential. How many thousands of people have died, not just on 9/11, but as a result of the use of 9/11 by politicians? How many thousands of our soldiers? How many hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians? How many others in countries in the region? The stakes are too high to allow buffoons like this to use it in such a patently obvious self-centered way to further their own political goals.
If you want to lie about this, he's the type of person that's willing to lie about the economy, international treaties and trade, about foreign policy, about
weather,
the way he approaches people. Yeah, if he's willing to lie about something this important, this is to so many Americans, why would he not lie about everything else?
Yeah.
That's actually a smaller issue.
Yeah, I know. If you've been believing him for years and years, it's tough to finally open your eyes to the fact that he's a massive liar and that he's not really lying to me because I don't go to his rally. He's lying to you. He's lying to his supporters. But there's a lot of value in finally realizing that. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break. We come back. Lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Not long ago, presidential candidate Kamala Harris put out her plan to reform the VA and improve the situation for our veterans in a number of different respects. The plan is complex, you can read about it online, but some of the highlights include reversing the transgender ban in the military that was put into effect in the last couple of years, expand healthcare and housing assistance for veterans, reinstate benefits for those discharged for conduct that was the result of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injuries, protect vets from scams around for-profit colleges, and a number of other issues that have gone unaddressed for a very long time. And joining us now to discuss is someone who knows quite a bit about this situation, congressional candidate Jose Caballero for the 53rd District in California.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you are a veteran.
Yes, I am.
So what do you think about this plan?
So I think it's a great step in the right direction. First, addressing and reversing the military transgender ban is critical, right? Mm-hmm. Because we shouldn't be stopping Americans from serving the country. This is a volunteer force, so if you want to volunteer and you're physically fit, you should be able to join. I think that when it comes to the other than honorable discharges, I think that there is a lot of factors that go into that that may not be fair. It may be a lapse in judgment, you know, by getting behind the wheel and being inebriated or possibly getting into a fight and those type of things. We should be able to protect our veterans, even if they serve, even when they make a mistake. And the fact that we're ripping benefits away from veterans that make one mistake in their entire careers is a tragedy, and we need to protect that.
Do you think there's some kind of, at least as far as ripping benefits away for certain things, there's a secondary agenda behind that, maybe to, not for the punishment purposes or for the purposes of making sure people don't do that, but for the purpose of just reserving some level of money to throw somewhere else?
You know, there is a lot of that. So you got to think about, you have the VA loan, which is a very large benefit. You have the education benefit that's also very large. And the fact that there are some veterans that I know personally who got a loan repayment program and they got an other than honorable discharge and then they have to repay back the military. Oh. I know people right now that are getting their wages garnished because they owe the military money because they got an other than honorable discharge. Yeah. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is, and it seems like I'm not a vet, but right. From a complete outsider's perspective, it seems pretty good.
Yes.
But I want to compare it to another plan. This
yes.
is one of the cores of your campaign.
Yes.
This is the Hero's Promise. If we could bring up a graphic, it's going to
yes.
have some details about it. So tell us about what from your plan would you like to see Kamala Harris or other presidential candidates take up?
I would love to see the end of service pension included mm-hmm. to the plan, because we need to make sure that we give economic benefit to allow a transitioning military member into the civilian world. And Kamala Harris even explains this on the transition, on how difficult it is as a veteran to come mm-hmm. out of the military into civilian life. And if we give them some form of a pension, something small, something that can last a couple years to get them back on their feet, I think that's very critical. And I think that we should also include the mental health services, mm-hmm. because Kamala Harris does say some things like, people tend on PTSD tend to act out. It's not acting out. This is a mental health issue, right? So this isn't some teen angst that some
yeah.
veteran has, right?
Right?
So this is actually a real serious issue. So I'd like to see more mental health structured into this plan. I think that's something I would like to see for sure.
Yes.
The whole thing, if possible. But yeah,
I can
deal with that.
So sort of around that issue, there are several vets running for president right now. You've got obviously Tulsi Gabbard. I believe Buttigieg
yes.
served. Tim Ryan, I believe.
Yes.
I apologize if I miss any others. I haven't heard these sorts of plans being a big part of most of the debates or anything like that.
Right.
Should it be a larger part of the conversation?
Absolutely. When we're losing 20 veterans a day to suicide, this is an epidemic. The fact that today is 9/11, the fact that since 9/11, we have lost 139 veterans to suicide, that is the issue that we need to be addressing right now, because too many families are being devastated every day because of these tragedies.
Yeah.
It's an epidemic. And so, yes, I think it needs to be front and center on the debate stage at some point.
Well, we'll have to see. We've got a debate coming up literally tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll see if it's discussed.
Yes.
I want to turn to your campaign,
yes.
Jose. So there was a contested primary.
Yes, it was.
Which is slightly less contested now.
Yes,
tell
it
us
is.
About this development.
So on Wednesday at 1 p.m., my phone exploded to mm-hmm. the greatest news of my political career, that Susan Davis, the neo-lib corporate Democrat, has dropped out.
The incumbent.
And the incumbent has dropped
20
out.
20-year incumbent?
20-year incumbent, that's
okay.
correct. And the reason this happened is because of the uncomfortableness that we were setting in this campaign on the issues, pulling her to the left, on Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, education for all, and bringing the troops home with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, up to the lead up to this abrupt announcement, she was doing massive mailers and emails across the district asking people about their opinions on Medicare for All and mm-hmm. the impeachment inquiries. I don't think she got the answers that she wanted. And I don't think she wanted to be the next Joe Crowley either.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we believe that she dropped out. And what this happened is this created a vacuum, of course, right? So this could be summarized in two conversations. First was with the billionaire heiress to the Qualcomm fortune, Sarah Jacobs, who is now running in this race. And the audience may know a little bit about her. And what that is she ran against Justice Democrat Colonel Doug Applegate when Daryl Issa dropped out of the race, because Applegate did the same thing. He pushed him so far that he had to drop out to save his political career from embarrassment. So at the end of that conversation, after she called me to tell me she was gonna run, I asked her one simple question. What issues am I lacking or am I wrong on that is compelling you to run? The answer, I haven't thought about that yet. That's the reality of what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the second conversation I had was with the sitting council president of San Diego. She is the most powerful establishment Democrat in the San Diego region. And she called me so I can bow my head so she can tell me that she is running.
Mm-hmm.
And to top it off, to make it even worse, she thanked me for me changing the dynamics of this race.
To provide an entrance?
For her.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you.
That was very nice of you.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, progressives are not a historical footnote to a establishment's career.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not gonna happen. So.
Or a stepladder.
And I wanna say this. If she had political courage, she would have actually ran against the district that she actually lives in, Juan Vargas. She should have ran in that district. But the fact that she's taken the political opportunity to run now, shows where her interests really lie.
Where do those interests lie? She told you she doesn't have a platform, basically.
Well, Sarah Jacobs told me she didn't have a platform.
Right, yeah.
Yes, yes.
So have you discovered that yet? How long has it been since she told you, I don't know?
Oh, well, you can look on our website right now, and there is not an issue page there, which I find odd since she's run for Congress before, right?
I never understand that.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know how somebody can put out a campaign without issues. I think it's insane.
I'm working on my issue page for my website, and I do the news.
Yeah.
If you're a politician, you should really have that at this point.
I agree. So what we have to do is we have to stand up against these corporate establishment Democrats that are coming in and trying to take seats away from true progressives.
Yeah.
We cannot stand for it. We cannot stand for it.
Well, it certainly looks like it's gonna be an exciting race. It might have seemed initially that when the incumbent dropped out, it's like, oh, this thing's clinched. But no, it might actually get even more fiery.
It's getting more fiery, and I'll tell you, we need the TYT army. Because with $50,000, we will win this primary. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that. Because it is critical that we actually fight at the doorstep. Because what's going to happen is that $5 million from the oligarch coming in is going to distract the establishment to try to beat her on the media, try to beat her on TV, try to beat her in the mailbox, right? But what we need to do is stay on message at the door.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to win this. And we need your help because we cannot allow what happened in District 49 to Doug Applegate happen now in this district.
That's the 53rd district, Jose Caballero. Thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Great to have you here.
Yeah.
We're gonna take a quick break. We come back, lots more to get to. Our democracy has major issues, and there are significant problems affecting voters today. The issue is the actual problems aren't necessarily being discussed very much, not by those in power. It's BS, fake concerns that don't actually exist. For instance, this.
And you go to California, which is so many sanctuary cities, they don't know what's happening out there. You have people that want to get rid of those sanctuary cities. They just aren't able to do it with the people that get elected. A lot of illegal voting going on out there, by the way. A lot of illegal voting.
Okay, so you've probably heard that before. Millions of illegal votes in California. Where's your evidence? It's right here. There's nothing. But let's set up a voter fraud commission. Let's have it do meetings for like 9 months and then fade away into the mist like Thanos snapped his fingers because they didn't find anything. It's about protecting his ego. And the issue is, there are significant problems that need to be addressed in a number of different ways. We're not gonna touch all of them, but you know, weirdly, just in the last 24 hours, we had a special election. And in it, North Carolina Republican Dan Bishop, he won. Narrowly, it was within 2 points, but he won as a result of after winning his primary back in September, earlier. So he ended up winning this because in the previous election, this was a special election to replace, Mark Harris, who'd been the candidate, declared that he wouldn't be pursuing another run in the re-election that was necessitated because there was very good reason to believe that he had tampered with absentee ballots. And even though there was a ton of evidence that the Republican candidate had falsified the vote, they didn't make him lose and award the win to the Democrat. They just said, we'll have another election. And in this one, the Democrat didn't win. He won the first one, but not the second one. So conveniently, as a result of Republican voter tampering, Republicans have another seat in the House.
See, we get a do-over. Anytime you see someone, especially like Trump and generally this Republican Party, being concerned about something that's happening that's unfair to our democracy, a lot of times it's them that's carrying it out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's pointing that way because all the attention should be at the person that's pointing. So every time he says, look over there, just turn those fingers back and that's who the guy who's implementing exactly what the problem is. Also, the specifics of what he said in that opening clip was, people are doing things down there. By the way, there's illegal voting. And they just can't do anything about it.
They don't know what's happening.
Simple details, just, and of course, no one can ask him this at one of his hate rallies. But which people? Why can't they do it?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of illegal voting? Who's carrying it out? How are they getting it done? You know all this stuff, right? Yeah. How about you tell us how it's happening?
Yeah, exactly. And let's talk about something else that's happening. We're gonna go over, I apologize, but this is just too important not to talk about because look, individual claims of voter fraud that don't exist, that's an issue. But systemic voter suppression is far worse. And so Mother Jones just did a great write-up about something that's been going on for the past 5 or 6 years. Back in 2013, the Supreme Court gutted a core provision of the Voting Rights Act. The requirement for certain states with a history of voter discrimination to pre-clear changes in their election rules with the federal government. In the 5-4 decision, Shelby County versus Holder, the court ruled that the coverage formula for determining those jurisdictions subject to that pre-clearance was outdated and therefore unconstitutional. So for literally decades, states that were known to, with a racial objective, stop people from voting, had to go through the federal government. And generally, we're still allowed to do whatever they wanted. But it was at least something. Then that was cleared in 2013. But it probably didn't have any effect, right? Well, no, unfortunately not. There's a new report, Democracy Diverted, polling place closures and the right to vote. Since 2013, in those places that had previously needed pre-clearance, 1,688 polling places have been shut down. It's an analysis of hundreds and hundreds of counties over that time period. And most of the closures, according to the report, quote, occurred in states and localities with past histories of racial discrimination in voting, and that some took place amid a larger constellation of efforts to prevent voters of color from electing the candidates of their choice. Things like incredibly harsh and difficult to get voter ID, things like that. To give you a breakdown of how bad it is in certain areas, Texas shut down 750 polling places, Arizona 320, Georgia 214. That was actually a big story in the last midterms, was Georgia just right before the election shutting down tons of polling places in areas that, hey, what do you know, a lot of African American voters tend to live.
It's again, you can see all the smoke, you can see the fire, but until people in power do something about it, it doesn't matter. We can talk about it, we can point out the obvious discrepancies or actually see what's happening here. And I don't want to completely blank on his name, but Wyrick from the 80s, the Republican, maybe strategist, but Republican who said, hey, I don't want people to come out and vote.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We win when fewer people vote.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. When you have huge voter turnout, you have people that elect, they're more likely to elect someone who's gonna do something for them rather than the person who tells them what they should think.
Yeah.
And he said it openly, for this party, I don't want people to vote.
Yeah.
It's happening right in front of your face. That's not some new age prophecy that isn't on tape, if we don't wanna believe what quotes say. Just look at it directly, we've seen it a million times. So when you shut down over 1,600 voting places, what does that mean? It means fewer people vote. And where are those places being shut down? In places that historically we've always shut down voting.
Exactly. Yeah, the theme of the show is there are no lines in the sand that you can't cross. So you can oppose health benefits for first responders on 9/11. And even when the two parties are shouting their ideas about who should vote and how much voting there should be, and it could not be more clear that the Republicans don't give a damn about democracy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to hurt them. It's not a thing that people campaign on. People don't lose their seats for trying to stop Americans from voting. I guess I'm dumb and naive. That seems like it should be important, but apparently it's not. So anyway, there are issues with our democracy, but they're not the ones you're gonna hear about at a Trump rally. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, maybe a solution to some of these problems, impeachment, after this. Congress is back in session after a recess that included multiple mass shootings, huge amounts of corruption by the Trump administration, disaster after disaster. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she came back ready to fight, as you'll see in this clip.
My constituents are absolutely supportive of impeachment. They're the ones that are being impacted the most in some ways by this president, whether it's immigrant families, whether it's military service members who are having or adopting children abroad, that whose very citizenship is now in question. The corruption of this president knows no bounds. And in order to protect our democracy, we have to impeach him. We, as an independent body in the House of Representatives, we have to do our job. And I think that once the House impeaches, the House has impeached the president. And then that hearing goes to the Senate. If they want to fail it, then I want to see every Republican go on the record and knowingly vote against impeachment of this president, knowing his corruption, having it on the record so that they can have that stain on their careers for the rest of their lives, because this is outrageous. To protect the amount of lawlessness and corruption coming out of this presidency, you know, this president will not last. Whether he's voted out next year or whether he serves another term, this president will not last. But those members in the Senate need to carry that legacy, and they need to go to bat for what they're doing.
I do not understand how anyone can watch that and not think that that is an incredibly reasonable way to proceed on this issue.
Because we push so much of the normal thought process of, A, don't say anything about impeachment because that's gonna help. Because they don't want exactly what she pointed out. It checks every box. Basically, like, the people who don't wanna talk about it because they don't wanna have to have that voting, that record of voting against impeachment of the most corrupt president in modern history. Mm-hmm. So if they can avoid, if they can get the police to not carry it, to not go and answer the call, they can sit back and go, oof, at least I'm not on record supporting this guy. I can support him quietly and behind the scenes without having to deal with the actual consequences of being connected to him.
Yeah, and it really goes both ways. Get the Republicans on the record of protecting Trump despite everything that we know about him, but also get our members on the record that we tried to stop him. Because I'll go even a little step further than AOC there. So she made a reference to protecting this president despite all the lawlessness that we know about. But here's the issue. They would be protecting him if the House impeached him and it went to the Senate. But that's not who's protecting him now. Right. They don't have to. They're sitting in the back. The ones who are protecting him right now are the ones stopping the impeachment proceedings from going forward. That's not Mitch McConnell. That's Nancy Pelosi. It is the Democrats right now who are saying, yes, we know all of the stuff that he's doing, the huge amount of corruption, the concentration camps on the border, all of that. We get it. We're not gonna do anything. And Trump is clearly learning from that, and he is getting worse. And that is a result of the Democratic strategy. And look, Speaker Pelosi doesn't want it to happen. There's 134 now, it was 130 as of this Mother Jones report. There's 134 House Democrats on the record saying they support impeachment. You hear talk from like Jerry Nadler about like, hey, we're gonna like talk about the possibility of starting some sort of little thing. Okay, that's better than Pelosi's position, but right there with AOC, that is a message that's not just reasonable, but that will persuade people.
People need to be proven, politicians, let's keep it real, needs to be proven to them that this is gonna be the way it's gonna go. So as soon as they throw out to Jerry Nadler or throw out to Nancy Pelosi, hey, do you actually agree with AOC and what she said? Be ready to say, hell yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with what she's saying. And Jerry Nadler can go to the degree, I understand, as you just mentioned, his wanting to make sure all of the complete case is put together. Nobody wants you to do something incomplete or do something just willy-nilly without any real evidence. Yeah, I get that you're collecting it, but at least let people know that you're collecting it because you see what everyone else sees. Mm-hmm. Sometimes constituents need to see that their elected leaders see the obvious fact in front of them instead of going, am I the crazy one? Because I voted for you and you're not seeing the reality in front of my face. Let them know that you're there and then go ahead and continue the normal process. It's okay to do things the right way. Just say you're gonna do it.
I agree. And she is. And thank God that they're back in session. It's been a rough time. Anyway, we do have to take a break. When we come back, one more story to close out the show. Let's talk about an insane case of discrimination in high school athletics. This is about a Diamond High School swimmer who was denied a victory last Friday after she was disqualified for a quote, uniform violation. Well, that sounds serious. What was wrong with her uniform? Well, Annette Rode, who was working as an official at the dual meet back on Friday, said she froze in disbelief when she saw the disqualification decision by the meet referee, who has not been officially identified. Rode said, I told her, I need to know how you're defining this because this is going to blow up. She said the official replied that the bottom of the girl's suit was so far up I could see butt cheek touching butt cheek. And South High coach Cliff Murray said at the beginning of the season that high school coaches were told that as far as the buttocks region goes, you should not be showing any part of the intergluteal cleft. I don't think I've ever heard that term before. And so this athlete was disqualified as a result of this. Now, there are several things you need to understand about this case. First, she was wearing the official school approved handed out swimwear. It's what they told her to wear. You should also understand that she's black.
If you didn't get that before all that, then you weren't paying attention.
Unacceptable that she looked the way she did in what they gave her to wear.
So in case you didn't pick up on exactly what was being said with all of the terminology, was she caught a wedgie because she's an athlete and she's moving. Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly because she won. After winning, the judge isn't concerned with the time or any of the specifics of the technical part of the swimming to make sure that they didn't break any other rules. I'm not sure what else the judge is looking for, but she's looking at her butt closely enough to see butt cheek touch butt cheek. Now, if a father of some other athlete in the stands says, I'm seeing that 16, I don't know how the girl is, I'm gonna throw 16 since it's a high school age, a 16-year-old's butt cheek touching other butt cheek, I would run him out of the school and be like, I need you to stop looking at these girls so closely. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with you? This is the problem. Just how about we let the race finish and let the kid win? What is she supposed to wear? What's the alternative? If a kid shows up and does something against the rules, there's usually an alternate thing they're supposed to do instead. Mm-hmm. What else was she supposed to do?
Yeah.
That's the question she'd be asking this judge, by the way, which is not identified yet. You can throw down a ruling like this, take away this victory, and then not be identified. Stop being a coward. Come forward and stand up for what you did.
So you mentioned there that they should be paying attention to the performance rather than looking at a teenager's butt in this particular way. It actually goes a step more creepy, more pervy than that. The Washington Post reports that previously a parent took a photo of this girl's butt and shared it with other parents to point out incorrect swimwear. This is a high schooler.
Incorrect swimwear, actually incorrect body type.
Incorrect body type, yeah. You gave her the outfit. The idea, let's say you found out that I went to a swim meet and I took a photo of one of the high school athletes' rear ends and started showing it to people. That's all you'd need to know about me, right? But then you find out the reason they're doing it is maybe even worse than just being a perv. It's a racial assault against someone whose body type combined with clothing is unacceptable.
You know, people were also upset at Serena Williams because she's too much of an athletic beast that destroys other athletes. Because, she had her tire problems. She had problems with the things that she was wearing. People didn't like what she was wearing because they're too busy watching that and not watching how she's destroying people on the court. Pay attention to, or you know what, if you don't like losing, do better.
Yeah. So she, I think I remember, it wasn't there recently a case of that? She was wearing like a black bodysuit or something like that.
It was like a cat.
It was a cat suit or something.
Yeah, and then it was
like
Nike
fully
made
covering,
it. But
it wasn't acceptable.
Because this is one of those things where I talk about since the beginning of not time, but beginning of our history, the way that we objectify, hate, and shame black bodies, because that's what we've minimized folks to. It's a student athlete. She's in high school. She goes to class every day. Mm-hmm. But what you're taking pictures of is her butt.
Yeah.
Are you taking pictures of her when she's in class too? Because she's studying and doing that work there too. We're worried about and putting on the line black bodies. The parents of this student, man, whoever's sending this around and whoever accepted this picture that some parent took to shame her, or maybe when they lust over her, we're gonna have to. They need to be expelled from the school.
Yeah, you can't take pictures of high schoolers' butts, let alone obviously all the racial components. And by the way, I don't know the political leanings of literally anyone involved in this.
Doesn't matter.
But here she's showing too much. I don't know, but I will say there are people, conservative people, that get like worked up into a frothing rage because some Muslim women want to swim in full body covering. So that's not acceptable. You show too much is not acceptable. You cover too much, it's not acceptable. Maybe it's just about control, actually. Maybe it's not about skin. Maybe it's about controlling every aspect of certain types of people's lives.
And also you have to ask yourself, and this goes to the same theme I guess I've been saying this whole time. If she came in last place, would you be concerned?
I kind of doubt it. Now look, there's been a lot of public pressure thanks to the reporting. And following a review The Diamond Hill, sorry, this is the Anchorage School District statement said, they've concluded that our swimmer was targeted based solely on how a standard school issued uniform happened to fit the shape of her body. We cannot tolerate discrimination of any kind, even the types we won't acknowledge in this letter. And certainly not based on body shape. This disqualification was heavy handed and unnecessary.
What are you gonna do about it?
100%. They've reversed it, but are they gonna talk to this ref? Are they gonna talk to this parent? Are they gonna make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone again? I hope, but I kind of doubt it.
There's little worry about taking something like this away from this girl, but there's all this worry about taking something away from this judge.
Yeah.
Why is her name not out there? He or she's name out there, and why hasn't their position been at least suspended at this point?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, I guess it's an update. I'm not sure that it's progress. Thank you as always, Jer. Always good to have you on. Especially on an important show, 9/11, an emotional show. Let's keep it real. Yeah. Thank you to everybody who's been watching throughout the show. By the way, tomorrow's a solo show, but Emma Vigeland returns on Friday, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.